Most New Yorkers have something of a love-hate relationship with the subway, but I suspect we don't think of them as what Tracy Kirkpatrick describes as a subject matter about which to make art, as a site within which to make art, and as a canvas upon which to make art. In Art in the Subway, Ms. Fitzpatrick explores the various ways in which the subway has served and evolved in the art world throughout the past century. She teaches art history at Purchase College, and she's also a curator at the Neuberger Museum of Art in Purchase. Her book is published by Rutgers University Press. I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
So you work in Purchase. Do you spend much time in the New York City subways?
I do. I have in the past, and I took the subway here today.
What made you first start thinking about art in connection with the subways?
It came through a project that I did several years ago on the paintings and illustrations made by Reginald Marsh of the subway.
He loved to paint pictures of people crowded into the subway as a kind of socialist realism of the time?
Absolutely.
Or social realism?
Social realism, that's right. Yeah, they're wonderful, wonderful paintings. They're so rich in detail, and they tell so much about the subway, and I think they're really, they've really held over time, and you really see a lot about the subway in them that you feel today as a subway rider.
Although Reginald Marsh is largely forgotten by most people. He's not the most fashionable artist today. He could do those paintings, but photographers were kind of forced not to take pictures for a while, weren't they?
Well, it's funny. They were in the there was a ban on photography in the subway in the 50s, in 60s, 70s, up through the 90s. And I know there have been attempts, recent attempts within the last, say, 5 years or so, to reinstitute a ban on photography, you know, without a tripod. I think people do think that it was banned in the 30s and 40s when people like Walker Evans were taking their pictures, 38, 41, but there wasn't a ban at that time.
And Walker Evans, a great photographer, took some great photographs.
Fantastic photographs. You know, he would hide his camera underneath his coat with the shutter peeking out through a buttonhole so people wouldn't know that they were taking his that he was taking their photograph, and he took fantastic, fantastic pictures.
Who were some of the other artists, notable artists, who made art about the subway?
Oh, there are so, so many, particularly in the 30s and in the 40s. Mark Rothko, who is best known for his color field paintings, did a whole subway series in the 1930s. Wonderful, wonderful pieces that he did during his figurative phase.
And why do you think that the subway was such a favorite subject? Is it because it represented at the thinking of the time that America was a great melting pot, especially New York?
I guess so. It really was sort of a microcosm of the melting pot of New York. You know, there were expansions to the subway in the 1920s, and those expansions created what are called the subway suburbs, and you saw lots of people flocking to those spaces so that they could live in greener places than, you know, in lower Manhattan. And those people who used to walk to work, now they took the subway, and it really changed the nature of subway riders.
It was the sort of thing that you also saw in a lot of movies from the time. The film would start off with some woman's feet walking down the street. She'd go down the stairs and enter the subways.
Exactly.
And that was our way of knowing that she was a regular worker here in New York. And
that's
then she'd
right.
enter some tall office building and
it's been
the plot would ensue.
Right. It's been the subject of great, great plots. Often sort of plot changes or plot twists in a film would occur in the subway.
Have the subways always been a subject for artists? They began, the first subways really started working in the beginning of the 20th century.
1904 is when the New York City subway opened, and I expected in my research that I would find a lot of art, you know, artists from that time making pictures of the subway, but there really wasn't. I didn't find anything until the teens.
But the subway stations were often works of art, weren't they?
They have always been works of art, and they are filled, particularly the older stations, filled with historical tiles, beautiful, beautiful ornate elements, beautiful.
And why has that been allowed to to deteriorate over the years?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it takes money to keep such things up. And I know there have been plenty of renovation projects. One of the things that the MTA does through the Arts for Transit program is pay particular attention to the original ornamental details of subway stations when they create new public projects.
Although I've always wondered why Arts for Transit was applied to one station and not another. It never seems to have anything to do with whether there are a lot of people using a station.
I think that their, at least now, their mode of operation is to place public art projects into stations where they are doing renovations so that it can be done all at the same time.
Didn't that program start at the same time that the city really went after graffiti artists?
Yes, a little bit later. I'd say in the early 80s is when graffiti really sort of waned for any number of reasons, and the Arts for Transit program was, I believe, formally, you know, went into formal existence in 85.
Are there some lines that are more interesting than others?
Well, I love the pieces that I love are the ones that that are contemporary pieces that also sort of reference the historical materials. So along the sixth line, for me, a piece like Mary Miss's work that they did during the renovations to the 14th Street station.
Where Donna Dennis also did something with walls from old stations.
Donna
Dennis. 14th Street.
I mean, they've had such wonderful artists work in that program. It's incredible. There's just wonderful things to look at all over the city.
And do you think most people even notice?
I hope that they do. I mean, most people are rushing when they're down in the subway, but also people are standing around for a while and sitting for a while. So,
well, have you heard about the experiment that the Washington Post ran with Grammy Award-winning violinist Joshua Bell? He played as a street performer at a subway station in Washington, D.C. in January 2007. It was videotaped on hidden cameras, and 1,097 people were recorded passing by. Only 7 stopped to listen to him.
Well, I
mean, this is a man that people pay a lot of money to hear in concert.
Subway riders don't stop for much, but I think they're looking, and I think they're listening.
Now, I'd like to believe that things would have been different in New York. That was Washington, D.C.,
right.
They have great museums, but I'm not so sure that they really know much about classical music.
Well, I don't know.
You don't talk much about performance in the subways here. You're more concerned about the visual arts?
I'm concerned with the visual arts, really the art that uses subway as a subject matter, art that is, as you said earlier, both made in the subway and on the subway.
My guest is Tracy Fitzpatrick. Her book, Art and the Subway, New York Underground, published by Rutgers University Press. How does our subway system compare to some of the other great systems of the world, like Washington or London or Paris, Berlin, Moscow, Mexico City, Toronto, Montreal?
I think the New York City subway is really special, and I think it is more than any of those other systems. It is really a part of the city. It is a part of the city dwellers' experience on a day-to-day basis. It's more meaningful in some ways because it threads all of us together. I think it's just more a part of New York than other subway systems are a part of those cities.
You talk about love and mayhem during the early days of the subway. How were the two concepts related during that time?
Well, this is a really something that was a lot of fun for me researching, particularly as it relates to songs that were created about the subway right after the subway opened. So 1904, or 5, or 6, or 7. The idea of love and mayhem essentially is that as people were being smashed together in the subway, bumping into each other as it went around corners, sharp turns, they would fall in love with each other. That was the subject of many songs at that time.
Well, I that can work both ways. But it was a change because women and men were suddenly, and people of all races were suddenly all put together in very tight spaces.
That's right. And it's interesting because before the subway opened, there were people who thought, you know, the elevated trains were so crowded. All of the means of getting around the city were so crowded. It was thought that the subway was going to change that it wasn't going to be crowded, and that men and women could be in the same place together without touching each other, without having to, you know, be in contact with each other, which, of course, as we all know, is not what happened.
Graffiti is probably the most famous example of using the subway as a canvas for art. When did it first appear in the New York City subway system?
Well, I think that's hard to say. You know, I write in the book that I think that nobody really knows when graffiti appeared on the walls of New York City.
But it seemed to come following vandalism in the subway. There was a time when you sat on comfortable seats. The seats often, they had this kind of rattan
right.
thing over rubber, and people started slashing them at some point. And we then wound up with plastic seats. And then graffiti seemed to start appearing.
Yeah, I mean, I think graffiti really changed the nature of the subway. Graffiti is a very, very interesting period of time. And, of course, it was, in the late 60s when it started, into the 70s and into the 80s when the sort of heyday passed. It was a very difficult time for the transit authority and for the city. It cost tons and tons of money to take care of. And at the same time, it was a moment of excitement for the writers who were putting their names out there to be seen by as many people as they possibly could have see their work.
And some of them, to the great dismay of those of us who were horrified to see all of that graffiti, they've gone on to have art careers.
That's right.
Galleries were taking some of these artists, or whatever you want to call them, and inviting them to show.
That's right. And that happened in, I'd say, the sort of early 80s. And I think it was a sort of double-edged sword. It allowed a lot of the writers to make money from what they were doing, because, of course, people need to make money to live. And at the same time, I think it really changed the nature of graffiti.
But and it also, by the way, was emulated all over the world. You see the same kind of graffiti in cities all over the world. What I thought was interesting was that the subways didn't become source material for the graffiti artists. You would have thought that they would have wanted to do something that actually worked with the subway. All that most of them wanted to do was to write their name as big as possible.
No, I think it was part of the excitement of working in secret and then suddenly having your work be seen. And so to do something that would have sort of worked in tandem with the subway or been something that was sanctioned by the transit authority really ran counter to what a lot of writers saw as the kind of work that they were making in their approach.
Has the campaign against graffiti in the subways worked?
Well, there is not terribly much graffiti in the subways any longer. I mean, I think it did work.
Part of it is because materials were used that made it hard for the writers to have any kind of permanence. But for a while, they were also scratching their names into the glass on the windows, and you don't see much of that anymore either.
No.
Maybe they've moved on.
Maybe.
Have other concepts been captured in the subway other than love and close proximity?
Sure. Of course, there are so many themes that came out in imagery that was produced, again, during this heyday in the 30s and in the 40s. The idea of poverty and race and so forth, these are all key themes in works from that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any favorites?
Well, again, I really love those Marsh paintings. I think he is still known, and I think they have held up over time, and they really do contain a lot of information that I think people can find accessible today.
I saw one of the Marsh subway paintings at the Brooklyn Museum recently. Where else can you see them?
The Whitney Museum of American Art has them. They have a large holding of them.
And I think that we have some kind of a slideshow that people can see on our website at wnyc.org. Do you see a progression in the way the subways are seen over the years? I mean, are they always seen as a positive thing?
No, absolutely not.
Because I mean, Reginald Marsh was showing them in a very positive light.
Well, for the most part. I mean,
it was a way to jumble a lot of people together.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Marsh's illustrations that he did for the Daily News in 1922, 1923, he really, you know, he does this great series called Subway Sunbeams that is essentially about the kinds of things that irritated writers then and still irritate writers today. I think when the Subway first came out, it was seen as an incredibly positive thing. And most of the work that was produced from songs and song sheet covers to films treated it in a very, very positive manner. I think as the subway became increasingly dilapidated, the imagery reflects that.
It wound up becoming more a subject for photographers. And some of the most famous photographers did take pictures. We mentioned Walker Evans, but Bruce Davidson, Helen Levitt also. Because if you were a street photographer, you would automatically also want to be a subway photographer?
Well, I think a lot of the street photographers who took pictures in the subway were subway riders. And so they were in the subway, and it probably dawned on them, well, I'm here. This is a good place to take pictures, too. Of course, it was a different kind of a thing because you're in motion while you're taking pictures, and you're in very close proximity to the people you're shooting.
One of my favorite subway decorations is by an artist I considered very great, Elizabeth Murray.
Yeah.
The Lexington Avenue and 59th Street.
She
did the equivalent of an Elizabeth Murray painting as a mosaic.
It's a fabulous piece. Blooming, it's called. Wonderful, wonderful work.
And then George Siegel, the sculptor, he did a piece in which he pretty much built a subway car.
Well, he actually took a piece of a subway car. He went into the train yards and cut a piece of a subway car out for himself, brought it home, and then created his plaster figure that sits in the subway. So all the details that you see in that work are a piece of an actual subway car.
Is this still happening? Do we have artists today who are doing things in the subway that are new and different?
Yeah, I think artists have made images of the subway, and there's performance art in the subway still. And, of course, the Arts for Transit program continues, I think it's as strong as it ever has been.
And then there are hidden cameras that the MTA has put up. Do we know what those pictures look like?
I don't know what those look like.
Well, I thank you. When you go on the subway now, because you've written this book, do you see it differently than you did before?
I appreciate it in a different kind of a way. I'm always looking around in a way that I might not have before, particularly at the details on the walls and the public art projects and just observing the way sort of people interact with each other.
But no temptation to take some pictures on your own?
No, I'm not an artist. I'm a writer.
If I were to go out there now with a camera, would the cops hassle me? Because we did hear about some problems earlier this year.
Well, I suppose it's possible, but you certainly are allowed to do that.
Now, WNYC Culture is exploring how New York commutes. On our show page, you can find a link to WNYC's Door-to-Door project where you can watch some video profiles of commuters and listen to other WNYC segments in this series. And on Friday the 25th at 5 p.m., Tracy Fitzpatrick is going to take some listeners on a tour to see some subway art. We can only accommodate a limited number of listeners for the tour, but if you're interested in joining, you can RSVP at culture@wnyc.org, and you can find a link on our show page. That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us, Tracy Fitzpatrick, who teaches art history at Purchase College, is a curator at the Neuberger Museum of Art in Purchase, New York. Her book, Art and the Subway, New York Underground, published by Rutgers University Press.